Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 6th, 2007. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week we bring in two marketing experts to help us with selling the concept of drinking homebrew to our friends and relatives. Bob Kriskaden and James Gardner, creative consultants and founders of Jim Bob, brainstorm to give us ideas on how to break through the barrier to sharing better beer. Well, if you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. Well, I want to start off this episode by marking the passing of a beer legend. As I'm sure you've heard, Michael Jackson, the beer hunter, passed away August 30th. There are those in any industry or profession who are pioneers and trendsetters and blaze a trail for those who come after. Any of us who consider ourselves beer journalists are following on the trail that Michael Jackson laid down. His respect for beer and those who make it is an example that we must follow. Those of us who were in search of the perfect pint, whether it's purchased or home-brewed, owe Mr. Jackson a debt. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to meet him myself, but you can read tributes from those who did at the Brewers Association site, beertown.org/Michael Jackson. You can also read memories and plans for commemorative toasts at his blog, michaeljacksonthebeerhunter.blogspot.com. And I'll post links to those sites on basicbrewingradio.com. Well, I think one of the ways that we can pay tribute to Michael Jackson is to continue our own quest for better beer. Let's take a look into the mailbag to see how we can further that cause. Carl from Brookfield, Wisconsin writes, "How long is too long to ferment a batch of beer? Back in the early part of June, I brewed a lemon wheat. Due to timing and several other factors, I never got around to bottling. Is it a lost cause at this point?" Well, I wrote back to Carl and told him if the beer tastes good, then he's probably still in good shape. The risks in keeping a beer too long in the fermenter, especially the primary fermenter, is in getting off flavors from autolysis. It's where the yeast dies and excretes off flavors into the beer. Autolysis being described as a rubber band flavor, and I believe it was John Palmer on this program who described it as similar to dried soup. If it's in the secondary, there's less yeast to come in contact with, so the danger of autolysis off of the yeast in the secondary fermenter is less. Also, if you leave the beer for an extended period of time in the fermenter with a lot of headspace, you might get some off flavors from oxidation, but I think I'd worry more about flavors from the old yeast. But again, I'd say if the lemon wheat still tastes like a lemon wheat, bottle it up and see how it comes out. Randy up in Minneapolis, Minnesota writes on the subject of skunking, a two-part question. First, is there a danger of skunking associated with brewing outdoors? I've done my last two batches on a turkey cooker, and while my patio is shaded, it's not consistent over the 2 hours or so the beer is in the kettle outdoors. Both batches tasted pretty good. Second question, I fermented in a small room in the basement that has good temperature stability. My question is, do I need to worry about skunking from the incandescent light about 5 feet from the carboy? I like to check the progress at least daily during primary. If so, do you think if I use something from my former hobby, an amber photographic safe light, would it decrease the issue? Well, skunking is caused by the reaction of certain wavelengths of light with the isomerized alpha acids from the hops. In other words, the alpha acids that have been chemically altered by boiling. And that's why hops don't skunk while they're still on the vine. Their alpha acids haven't been isomerized. Sunlight is said to be the worst at skunking, followed by fluorescent lights, and then incandescent lights being a distant third. So I wouldn't worry about turning on the light bulb a few times a day to check on your beer. And plus, if you used a safe light, you wouldn't see the normal colors of your beer, and you probably wouldn't be able to see as well, if your eyes are like mine, into the carboy to see what's going on. If you are worried about light, you can do what I do and cover your glass carboy with either a garbage bag or a paper grocery sack with a hole cut in it for the neck of the carboy. But you have raised an interesting point with your first question Randy, about boiling in the sun. I've never really thought about it, to tell you the truth. I've had beers, even lightly hopped beers, skunked in the sunlight in the glass on the patio, but I've never had a beer get skunked in the kettle, even sitting in the direct sunlight. I don't know what's going on there, though. Is the rolling boil and the cloudiness of the wort protecting the alpha acids from the sun? I don't know. Is there something to do with heat? I don't know. Maybe I should ask my chemistry professor buddies. But let me hear from you. Have you ever had a hoppy beer skunk right in the kettle? If so, drop me a line at james@basicbrewing.com or use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And please double-check your email address so that when I hit the reply button, I can respond to you. Still getting feedback on adding coffee to beer from a couple episodes ago. Dan from New York writes, "I think you may have left out a way to get coffee into beer. After reading Randy Mosher's book, Radical Brewing, I've been waiting to try this infusion technique. I'm going to make a coffee stout this weekend. To get the coffee into the brew, I'm going to put ground coffee beans into vodka and let them soak while the primary and secondary work their mojo on the stout. Before I keg the beer, I will strain out the coffee grounds from the vodka and add it to the keg, then the stout on top. I think this method should work out pretty well for infusing flavor into the beer." Well, thanks, Dan. I need to reread Radical Brewing again. That's an excellent book and very inspiring. I loaned my copy out, so you know how that goes. Need to get that back. I'd forgotten about this method in Radical Brewing. I did something similar with vanilla beans and whiskey for my vanilla porter and had good success there, so I'm sure your coffee stout will turn out great. But let us know how it goes, and I appreciate the note. Then there's this from Thomas in Denmark. "You discussed a special coffee that is eaten by an animal and then collected from the animal's droppings. The coffee is called Ka-fe-chan, maybe, and the animal is a weasel. The Danish microbrewery Mikeller brewed a special version of their Beer Geek Breakfast Coffee Stout with that coffee for a beer festival in Denmark in May this year." Thomas says, "Unfortunately, I didn't get to taste the beer, but judging from the reviews at ratebeer.com, it was a very good beer." Well, thanks for that, Thomas. Weasel poo coffee beer. I'd try that beer at least once, maybe. Maybe there'd be enough alcohol in the breakfast stout to keep my mind off of the origins of the coffee flavor. But I do have to say that's not the most off-putting ingredient I've heard of in a beer, if you can believe it. If you see me in person one day, buy me a beer and I'll tell you that story. Now, on to our interview. First, a little background. We all know it's not legal to sell our homebrew for money in the United States. So when you hear me talking about selling or marketing homebrew to our friends and relatives, put air quotes, you know, quotation marks around the terms selling and marketing. What I'm talking about is selling our friends and relatives on the idea of drinking good beer. Now, we've all run into the situation. We take some good beer to a friend's house and put it into the fridge next to their big boy beers. You know, we love good beer and want to share a love of bitter brews with our friends, but sometimes it's hard to break through the barrier that our friends have in their minds against trying something new and different. So at the end of the evening, you know, all the big boy beers are gone. Our beers are still there. Good news for us. But, you know, the big brewers have marketing teams to help them sell their products. So I thought for this episode, I'd call in a couple of talented, world-class marketers to give us some ideas on how to share the love of good beer, and specifically, homebrew. Bob Criscadden and James Gardner have worked on major brands in the United States. In fact, you've seen their work on television, magazines, newspapers, the internet, the highway, anywhere where you can see branding. Bob and James have worked. They've now shed the shackles of corporate life and have founded their own company. It's called Jim Bob. And they were gracious to trade time for beer on the balcony of their company's headquarters. Well, Bob Criscadden and James Gardner, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Well, thanks for having us here today.
Pleasure to be here.
And Bob, start us off by telling us
What is Jim Bob, and what do you guys do? And maybe you guys can talk a little bit about your backgrounds, where you come from.
Well, Jim Bob is a unique marketing consulting company that brings two long-term professionals together, myself and James, who together have 40-plus years of experience in either advertising as running an agency or on the client side as senior marketing, chief marketing officer for the Fortune 75 company, Tyson Foods. James?
I apologize because James is also holding a microphone and it completely threw me off when you said James. So Jim Bob, I guess this is now the end of August. Jim Bob was a plan that was hatched a couple of years ago. Bob and I would have a couple of beers and wonder what would happen if we ever started our own agency, our own consultancy. So it was very much hatched out of that. We've been in business for
four months
now, I guess, and going very well so far because now we're sitting on our palatial penthouse outdoor deck drinking beer with James Spencer. So that's a pretty good deal so far.
Yeah, that's pretty much the pinnacle. You peaked 4 months into the into the thing.
Well, when you get free beer from your friends on the deck, and it's right now we're drinking a
Belgian wit.
Wit, and it has a nice aroma and a very good taste. You know, it doesn't get any better than this. You know, for us, Jim Bob, where our real experience is in branding and communication. So what we've specialized for the 40-plus years is helping people bring their ideas to the marketplace and sell their products. So that's really our specialty.
Proud growers of great ideas is really what Jim Bob is all about.
Absolutely. That's a great tagline, Jim.
Okay. Enough of the propaganda from No, you guys really are talented, and Bob, in full disclosure, you were my boss, or my boss's boss, actually, at one point, and I learned a lot from you on branding, and I worked with you, James, on website development and such as that, and was really impressed with both of you, and you say you've got free beer, but it's not actually free because I'm hoping to put you to work for the next 30 minutes in helping us. And we as homebrewers, the homebrewing community, have come to you on advice on branding and, quote-unquote, selling our beer to our customers, which is our family and friends. And we can't sell it legally. You cannot sell homebrew. But there is a sales pitch that goes on when you sell the concept of drinking homebrewed beer to your friends and family. And a lot of times what we find out is that as I walked in today, both of you guys had a can of Miller Lite in your hand. And
by the way, it's 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon.
and James immediately blamed Bob for that. But give us some background on what we're battling against with our brand, which has we're starting at ground zero. And we're trying to get into the brains of people who drink the bigger beers. What are we up against?
Well, I think first of all, I think we all realize that the brewing industry today spends tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, communicating to consumers about their beer. And whether it's Miller Lite, Bud Light, Amstel, Corona, all of them have the same mission, which is to try to get you to drink their beer, and they use all kinds of different tactics, whether it's a internet site, TV advertising, print, point of sale in the grocery or liquor store,
packaging.
There's a whole host of means they use to bombard you with the message to pick up their beer. So I think as a home brewer, the best expectation you can have is probably not to replace the beer that they're drinking today, but to actually get into their consideration set. So when they're sitting around thinking about having a beer, they think not only, well, I'm just going to have a Miller, but I might have a Miller, and my friend had that really good beer. I think I'm in the mood for that tonight. So what you're really trying to do is get in the consideration set, not necessarily replace what they're already doing.
And in typical Jim Bob form, I'm not going to completely agree because my perception, and I'm of course we're speaking in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and I'm originally from Seattle, where beer is snobbery is prevalent everywhere. I would, if my friends saw me drinking a Miller Lite or a Bud Light, I mean, they would scoff at you if you ordered one in a restaurant or a bar because there's so much great beer there. So it's even how do you change a potential customer's perception of beer in the first place? That beer can be more than just something that is just cold and wet, and you know, a means to an end basically, you know, on a tailgating thing. Whereas beer can actually be an indulgence. Really good beer can be like ordering a very nice bottle of wine at a restaurant, or ordering a very nice brandy. It can be that same sort of mentality, and I think that's an easier angle to attack for home brewers than it is to try to tackle the other aspect.
But
of it.
Jim, don't you think that I mean, for most of us, and I'm a diehard beer drinker, I don't drink anything else but beer. That maybe people don't know that aren't from Seattle, that don't have that beer snobbery going for them, that have only had, you know, the beers from national manufacturers, really don't know what a good beer tastes like. How do you educate them on what a good beer? How do you educate them that? Because a big part of branding is all about education. So what advice would you give to somebody to try to educate them that the beer you normally have
is not really beer?
Is not the right thing.
And James would agree. So I think a critical thing that James could do in this case is to, what I would do if I was James is I would give me, Jim, from Jim Bob, at least 3 or 4 cases of this Belgian wine.
Well, don't forget the Bob part of Jim Bob.
I mean, I don't know if you're interested in this or not, but I'm a serious evangelist, so I can go and help recruit and build this market segment for James. But what I would wonder is that if you can't, and you put an emphasis on this, you can't legally sell beer.
Correct.
So when you say you want to sell beer to friends and family, quote-unquote, what does that selling mean? Them just expressing interest in it?
Just, you know, when we get into home brewing.
Promo your lawn for beer?
No. When we get into home brewing,
right,
we get into this passion, and we want to share it with other people.
Sure.
And we run up into this barrier where, you know, you bring a couple of six-packs of homebrew, this, you know, wonderful Belgian something or, you know, an hoppy IPA or some, you know, something wild and wacky that you've come up with that tastes just about like this wonderful beer that you tasted in another. And you have all this enthusiasm inside of you, and you want to share it with people like Bob.
You can't give that beer away.
And you can't pry the... I mean, Bob is not a good example here, but some people that I've run into, you can't pry the Miller Lite out of their hands. And if they taste your beer, I let one relative of mine try this wonderful canned beer out of Lyons, Colorado, this Dale's Pale Ale, and he tasted it and he said, "What is that taste?" And I said, "It's flavor."
Exactly. Right.
That's back to my point of how do you tell them what a good beer tastes like? Yeah. How do you educate them?
And one thing that one approach that I found that doesn't work is I think I've accidentally insulted a few people because when I see not Miller Lite but another light beer in the hands of someone, I want to tell my rowboat joke. And I've told Bob this joke, but feel free to laugh again, Bob, to add
okay,
to the ambience.
Will.
But my joke is that, well, that beer's what I call a rowboat beer because it's a lot like making love in a rowboat because it's effing close to water.
So,
well done. I laughed again.
Nice.
So, but that's probably the wrong approach. Because
I heard it also called, and I've been told that I can't be too blue here, but piss water is a common term used in the Great Northwest for beers like the B word, and really Miller Lite doesn't have a lot of standing there, but and for obviously brands like Coors as well. And so it's a matter of, do you want to drink beer that tastes like water, or do you want to drink beer? So mm-hmm. I would always say, do you want to just get a Perrier instead? It's the same damn thing.
See, I think when you think about
TV words are good. That's
okay. When you think about beer, and I think about branding, you know,
I think about beer a lot.
I drink beer a lot.
I'm thinking about beer right now. Our glass is empty.
Our glass
is
half full.
Fish us out a.
The Belgian wit, by the way, was phenomenal.
Awesome. Say that again.
The Belgian
wit was
seriously. It was really quite good. Yeah. My wife is not much of a beer drinker, but she does love Blue Moon. And whether that's because she works with Coors or not, I don't know. But she likes Blue Moon quite a bit. But that, I would contend, is better than that.
Okay, so absolutely.
Seriously.
So where do we go next? I mean, okay, we have the Marts and Oktoberfest. We have the Vanilla Porter. We have a Belgian Brunette. We have Imperial Pilsner and the Harvest Ale. I think we should go to the Harvest Ale next.
All right.
This is a beer that is a pale ale that came from the... All the hops are hops that I've grown in my garden.
Yeah, Vanilla Porter is going to be last, right? That's basically the cognac
the
of...
Yeah. Or maybe the Belgian Dutch. Brunette, because it's the highest in alcohol, and maybe...
I understand that you were... Some of your friends took that the wrong way when you told them you had a Belgian Brunette that you were working on.
Or that you had a Belgian Blonde in your basement.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think he's working on it.
Yeah, you have to be careful what you say.
But one of the things, that, you know, let me go off on a... one area here, and that is, you know, when you think about brands.
Bob is now taking the mic.
I'm taking the mic. I'm only halfway into a beer, and I'm taking the mic. When you think about beer or any kind of thing that you have, and you talk about branding, the thing that you always have to remember is that the products or the brands that we use are a direct reflection on who we are. So when you talk about a person's beer, and James, you brought up that you'd had some issues with that before, you know, and sometimes you're actually insulting what their self-image is of themselves. You know, people think of their cars, their houses, their beer, their watches, their, you know, clothes they wear. They're a direct reflection of them.
Their trailer.
So you have to be careful. You have to be careful in your overzealousness not to tell somebody that basically their beer bites the big one, you know, because you're saying that they have bad taste. So how you deliver the message is as important as the message itself.
James, so, cheers, by the way.
Cheers.
We're moving on to the next beer.
Moving on to the next beer. You know, how you describe... The other thing is, I know when I've sat that's with people that are home...
Really, that's very good.
That's
sorry,
very good,
Bob,
too.
Right,
it's very good.
I love good beer. I love beer.
When
I was in Seattle just a couple months ago, Bob. I got to run you over.
I'm trying to tell the audience something that they might be able to use, but go ahead with your story that has no impact.
Yeah. Nice presumption there. Mr. I only drink Miller Lite. You have no value to add here.
Go.
All right, so traveling to Seattle, I don't know, 8 times or so in the last year, and each time I went, I took somebody from Arkansas with me who had not really ever been exposed to true microbrews at all. And watching their reaction when they went into just a hole-in-the-wall pub downtown, and when they saw that there were, you know, 10 or 15 different microbrews that were available and not really sure what they were about, and they would try one, and there's so much flavor and effervescence. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And, of course, the alcoholic content is a little bit higher than your typical Miller Lite or Bud Light. So that's always a big plus, too. But the impact then of coming here and then buying something like maybe a Snow Cap that you can get at local stores here, but it's brewed out in the Northwest, and bringing that to a party when it's ice cold and people going, where did you get that? And then, you know, I find myself locally, then I will call a local liquor store and say, hey, can I order 4 cases of Snow Cap? And they'll ship, Liquor World will ship it in from Seattle for me so I can keep it in the fridge for as long as I can. So, you know, and then...
In James's case, that's about a week.
That's about, quite honestly, it's about a week. Because then you have guys' night when the wife is traveling and the kids are at the in-laws and you have cigars and, you know, a fridge full of Snow Cap. And then you have guys that are coming over and going, oh, this is phenomenal. Where can I get this stuff? Where is it? You know, where do they brew it? Is all the other beer like this? You know, they're like this one. And people really start to develop a passion for full-flavored beers, and that's really what home brewing to me is more about.
Well, you know, okay, so thank you, James, for that interlude.
No worries.
what are the things that I've sat with home brewers before, James and another guy, but one of the things I know when I've talked to people about or heard these things before, people that are home brewers want to tell you how they made the watch, so to speak. They want to use all the terminology and tell you exactly what hops they use. And you know, by the end of what I'm listening to it, I go, yeah, right, okay, good. What's it taste like? So, you know, one approach might be, rather than trying to tell them how you made the beer first, let them try the beer and then enjoy it and then give them the detailed breakdown. I know, you know, all of us, whenever we do something, whether it's brewing beer or building a fence in the backyard or something that we spend a lot of time and effort on, we want other people to understand how much work and time and effort we put into it and be as excited as we are. So maybe temper that a little bit and focus on, you know, the person first and what they're going to experience, which is your beer. James?
I think that we do have a tendency to explain to people, you know, for instance, Bob, you asked me, how long does it take to make a batch of beer? And when I first got into the hobby, it would have taken me as long to tell you.
By the way, he hasn't told me yet how long it takes.
You can get that in about a month. Okay. So that's the answer that we should use. But in the back when I started, I would say, okay, well, you got to get the water up to boil, and then you got to boil for an hour, and then it takes about a da 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 da, and you know, 30 minutes later, the person's eyes are glassing over, and you know, they're out of it.
They're dehydrated. They have no beer.
Sure, it's Willy Wonka. You got to throw a cleat in because it gives it a little kick. You know? Watch that again the other day.
Men with kids. So don't over-explain it. Don't. I guess what your approach, James, to introducing people to better beer is to have them over to your house and just kind of by osmosis.
It's atmosphere. Atmosphere is everything. Think about the best experiences you've had where you had the best meal, where you've had the best glass of wine, those sorts of things. It isn't necessarily because the food itself was great. It was the atmosphere of the whole thing. And it'd be more analogous to wine again, because to me, home brewing beer, quality beer, is very analogous to wine. You don't order a bottle of wine in a restaurant, and they bring you the bottle. They don't flip it around so you can read the cute, quaint story in the back of the bottle first, which is to Bob's point.
Right.
They show you the label on the front. Is this what you've ordered? And then you taste it, you sample it, much like we are with the beers today, and then they leave the bottle on the table and they walk away. And then you end up picking the bottle up and flipping it over and reading the quaint story in the back, and you either laugh or chuckle or whatever you're going to do, and you hand that around the table then. And then you start to learn more about how this particular wine was made or really the brand of it. But it has to start with the taste of it first. So for me, having people at my house and then having good beers available for them and sharing them with them makes a huge difference, because if they go to the fridge and the Miller Lite's not in there, you know, and there's not a Corona, you know,
right.
They're going to ask a question about it more often than not, is what they'll do. What should I have? And they're going to point them in a direction then.
Well, and I think most people, you know, when they become interested in any subject, they start to ask more questions. And by the end of the evening or the event, you get to tell your entire story in a way where people are now receptive to it and really want to understand. And, you know, hopefully maybe one or two of them might ask you how you really did it, and can you show them how to brew their own beer?
Yeah, let's be honest about it. I mean, labeling has got to be hugely important. Labeling is huge because, again, like the bottle of wine, how many people, pardon us, there's a fire truck going by, how many people go into a liquor store and are looking to buy a bottle of wine, whether it's for a gift or for a party, whatever it might be, and let's be honest, they don't know a damn thing about wine. They're shopping by label and price point. All right, I'm going to get a good bottle. I'm going to spend $18 or $30. Now, which one looks good to me? You know, they kind of go that route. Well, so labeling is really important.
And I think, just to build on that, I think, you know, James is exactly right about the labeling. If you look today in, you know, most liquor stores that I go in, well, it's not that many, but all of them in Northwest Arkansas, you see Yellowtail, you see Bear Claw, you see all kinds of names that you never saw before.
Fat Tire.
The labeling of beer and wine has gotten much more creative over the last few years than before. It's not so stuffy, maybe in some cases unapproachable. So do you have the capability to produce labels for your beer that could really set the tone for what it is?
Well, I used to make, in my first few batches, I did make labels, but then I stopped when I realized that I was going to have to scrub those back off again.
Right.
So some people do make their own labels. As you can see, these bottles are clean, but the only labeling is on the, you know, a marker on the cap.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the presentation, to your point, presentation is important. If you serve your homebrew in old, nasty beer bottles that haven't been cleaned,
right,
Nobody's going to want to drink that. But if you serve your beer bottle either in a nice, clean bottle or if you want to go to the extra effort and put your own label on there, you know, that shows some pride of ownership and shows that you care about the product itself.
And well, this is different for me, James. I've never had beer from a mason jar, so this is a very different approach for me.
Well, what you know, from
just a joke.
As a marketer, one of the things I think about is, okay, if you can't label for real practical reasons that you've just described, you know, most of us have a printer on our computer today, and doing kind of a 8.5 by 11 that you put on your fridge. You know, for people that, sure. You know, you got all the pictures of the kids and everything else on there. Put
a hang tag with a rubber band on it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Put a flyer on the fridge so that when people, the third or fourth time they're going back for the beer, kind of like reading the back of the Wheaties box, you know, they start reading the fridge and looking what the labels
is. Is that the first beer, they just get, you hand them the first one, whether it's in a pint glass or in the bottle, whatever it might be. And then when they want the second one, then they actually have to read the complete story behind the beer, how you produce it, what you're trying to do, what your whole brand position is. And then they have to sign it before they get another bottle of beer.
Yeah, and on the fourth one, they got to get the tattoo.
That's right. You know? Like a fine idea.
Well, our glasses are empty again.
Okay, here, I'll hold the mic.
Yeah,
I don't
this, is, be this is dangerous. I'm giving Bob the mic again.
You know, they're laughing at me. I have no reason why that would be. But if you think about beer drinking, there's so many social occasions where you do it, and I think introducing to your friends, as James said, at your house, at the, you know, maybe the event that you're doing it at has some relevance as well. You know, if you're playing poker, you have time to sit and talk about the beer. If you watch in the Super Bowl, you really don't have much time because most people are screaming and watching the commercial. So having the right event. Right, you know, it's a means to an end. Good point. So having the right event to do that, and the other thing I would do once people express the fact that they do enjoy the beer is ask them to tell their friends. I mean, the best marketing tool. The two best marketing tools out there are word of mouth and a T-shirt. So if you can't get the T-shirts made, having other people talk about your beer is a huge thing. James,
agreed.
And I'm not sure which one. They're both pouring and drinking beer right now, so they've.
We'll be with you in a moment.
All right.
Now, we'll talk about. Oh, thanks, Bob. We'll talk about. First of all, before you, and this is a Martzen Oktoberfest from I can't remember which book. One of Mark and Tess Samotolsky's book, and it's overcarbonated, which is why it's got the head that's bigger than mine.
I like it.
But that's
I
what
like
I've heard.
The full body.
And James doesn't mind the dregs, so he's pouring every last little ounce of it.
Oh, really? Are you not supposed to drink the bottom of it?
Well, you know, if you care about your beer clarity, you know, as a part of presentation, you leave the little dregs in the bottom of the...
Because
it's yeast.
Because now they're in the bottom of my glass.
But it's just yeast, a little vitamin B there. And then some styles you're supposed to have the dregs
in. You can have vitamin B before, haven't you?
Absolutely.
You get that
disorder
that's got...
But before I forget what I was going to say... Part of... Part of what... Before you go to market with a product, you don't just go to market with a product. You got to make sure it's a good product, right? In everything that big companies put out, they go through some market testing, right? So how are we going to make sure that we've got a good product before we go to market?
Let me ask this again, because you dodged me the first time. What is the end game for you as a home brewer? You want to have a good product because you want to do what with it?
We're just wanting to share the love. You know, it's evangelism.
It's an altruistic kind of thing. It's an altruistic kind of thing.
Exactly. And plus, we, you know, we get a kick to our ego when people say, man, that's great.
And while you can't legally sell it, donations
can be accepted.
Can be accepted.
No, we're not even talking about... You guys are talking about money.
We're business guys.
We're marketing.
We can't help ourselves.
At the end of the day, we got to sell something to somebody.
Right. Somebody's got to buy it.
You're giving it away.
You don't have to, but here's the dish.
We're not selling it. But it's quote-unquote selling it. We are trying to get our friends and relatives on the road of good beer. We have found...
Do what then?
They'll drink more good beer. And maybe they'll buy good beer that you haven't tried and have it at their house, or maybe they'll start homebrewing too.
No, I get it. And, you want to do this so that your friends and family, when you go to their house, they don't have crappy beer in the fridge.
There you go.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good position for me.
That's coming clear to me.
But, okay, so but you guys have focus groups. Well, one of the tools is focus groups.
You know, there are so many ways to find out whether a product is good or not. And really, all that really matters in the end is what the consumer thinks, or in your case, your friends and family. You may love that beer, but if your friends and family don't like it, then it's not a very it's not an ongoing concern where you're going to be able to get your friends and family to try it. The other thing to remember is you only get one shot. If they drink a skunky beer first, or a beer that you think is just great but it's just too overpowering or doesn't taste right, the probability of them trying it again, it's going to be tough to twist their arm. So you got to make sure it's right coming out the gate. James, you've had a lot of experience in this area.
I don't drink beer in shots. Starters. And if I did, I would definitely have more than one shot.
Well, one idea that I have pondered over is in a focus group. You like that one?
Yeah, it's all good.
Which one is it? Sorry, James.
It's a Marzen Oktoberfest.
Ah, very good.
And
how long did it take you to make this one? About 30 days.
Well, it's a lager actually, so it took longer. It took several weeks in the lagering process to get that kind of smoothish type flavor.
But let me just say this. I mean, back to doing the consumer testing. You know, the thing to always do is to get people that you're in this kind of situation, it seems, people that you trust that will give you an honest opinion and are willing to work with you to get to the beer to the right place. So, you know, all of us have people that we can kind of lean on to do that. I think,
and if the audience is friends and family, they're going to be uniquely motivated to want to help you and to be involved. It's a fun thing to do.
And having them feel like they're helping to create the beer, all of a sudden they buy into it, so that it's not just you being the evangelist. You've evangelized the rest of the crew around you to help you.
And I'm sure that homebrewers like yourself, you design and brew and build beers as gifts for this family, or whether it's your sister-in-law, your brother-in-law, whatever it might be, right? Don't you do that?
Well, on occasion, you know, I've done meads for weddings, you know, for special events and such as that.
For Jim Bob.
So you might want to design a gateway beer,
right?
A lightly hopped, low gravity ale for your beer novice friends, right, to get them into the concept of breaking away from their mega brewery beers.
You're trying to teach them what a good beer tastes like, and it's, as someone described to me once, if you haven't seen the beach, how would you describe it? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the same in this case. If you've never had a good beer, how would you know how to describe it? So helping your friends in little incremental ways to get there is probably a good way to do it.
And another good way is if you are in contact with a homebrewing club, or if you enter contests, or if you know people who are experienced beer judges, people who have good palates, and that if you have a defect in your beer, say if you have an infection, if you have some sort of flaw in your beer, that you may not be picking up because you're used to it, and there's nothing wrong with these beers. You guys are making faces.
No, infection. That's for two marketing guys, that's a bad word.
And for the record, I just had a flash of terror wondering what exactly an infection would taste like.
Yeah.
That maybe I already know.
Well, Well, anyway, it can taste like a lot of things. But flaws, maybe, or imperfections
that's
in
right.
your beers.
That's better.
I had to put my copywriter hat back on. But if you find some people or a group of experienced brewers who can honestly give you feedback on what your potential imperfections in your beers are before you take it to market, so to speak, and present it to your novice beer friends and family, to make sure that you have a good product before you get it. Because you're right, Bob. If someone, and the one thing that these mega breweries have going for them is they put out perfect product
every time.
It's
very predictable.
Yeah, and you may disagree with the recipe. You may not like the recipe, but you ain't gonna find, you know, in that can of Miller Lite, you know that it's going to taste like that other can of Miller Lite that you had 3 years ago.
It's kind of like, you know, people ask, why has McDonald's been successful? You know. And the reason they've been successful, because they make a consistent product. It's not the best product on the market, but whether I'm here or in Japan, I can get the exact same burger or Big Mac. So that's what they have going for them is consistency, and they train us over time to feel like that's okay what they're serving us.
And in France, it's Le Big Mac.
Right. So. It's a path of least resistance, right. Which is often what it is when it gets to the big brand beers also. Right. It is the path of least resistance. You walk into a store, and there is a mountain of Bud Light or Miller Light or whatever, and they've got the big cutout girls in their bikinis that are wrestling or whatever it is, and you try to find the one cooler that you identify as the microbrews, and you can tell because it's the one cooler that instead of having just one logo in it, has 40 logos because there's only a six-pack of each one.
Right.
Seriously, I mean, that's how it goes when you go into the store. And, you know, and even the larger-scale liquor stores, trying to find the same one again is sometimes difficult. And you can tell how few people buy them because when you ask, they're like, you're the guy that bought that last time. I remember you, and then they'll plan from there. But
one thing that the macro brewers are doing to help us out is that they are diversifying their tastes. I mean, Blue Moon.
Absolutely.
You mentioned Blue Moon earlier. This is Coors, a favorite brand that homebrewers love to slam, and they're putting out an interesting beer now. A lot of beer lovers. May turn their nose up at it and say that it's not a perfect example of the style, but it's pretty good.
But it's an entry point into something new.
Right.
That's what turning their strength into yours is they've given now an opportunity for people to say, maybe the same old beer is not good enough anymore. Let me try this because it is readily available. I can still get it at a bar. Mm-hmm. First time I had one was at a restaurant, a Blue Moon, that is. And
we had
four, I think, more maybe. And then we went to...
We started a business.
Yeah.
Well, if we could go back in time now.
Yeah. So then we went to... Then I went to the liquor store on the way home to to make sure that I was stocked up.
Thirsty.
To stock up on Blue Moon. But the point of it is that it changed... That was enough of a difference. It wasn't so overwhelming that it stopped at the restaurant. It was enough of a difference in the beer that it made me go, you know, I want to try this at home now. So now my mind is a little bit more open towards homebrew, regional beers, microbreweries, microbeers, those kinds of things, because I've had an experience that says maybe I want to try something different.
And it worked. Once you get your foot in the door. Once the crack opens, mm-hmm. so to speak, you have an in.
Unless you're Billy Joe Gumball.
That's right. Then you're not letting go of it. You can't.
Yeah, you know. James,
because I like that Dale Jr. and I like the number 8 car. I'm only drinking Bud Light for the rest of my life. I'll tell you that right now.
And there's some target audiences like that. You're never going to change their mind. So, you know, at that case, make sure you get the Bud in the fridge and the rest of your friends can drink your beer.
But interestingly enough, you know, Coors is the mother of all homebrews, right? Coors has zero market share outside the United States. Mm-hmm. Zero. None. Nobody outside the United States ever buys Coors. They have almost no distributorship. They can't do it. They have no market for it. So for them to start to expand and create beers like Blue Moon, which for me, Blue Moon's fine. I like it because at least it's not a Bud Light. My wife will drink it, you know, so that's okay. But for me, it's like a Hefeweizen. Anything you have to add a fruit or vegetable to drink, I'm not necessarily crazy about.
I kind of like the orange.
I know. Some people like the orange. I'm saying. I like a fruity beer. I'm fired up for James to open up this vanilla porter because then I got to go pick up the kids from school here. But the vanilla porter is going to be phenomenal. I can hardly wait.
You ever had a vanilla porter?
No.
Oh, my gosh. It's
good. So let's close on maybe one final concept that I've heard on... in media training, what is persuade the persuadables, right? You find the people, those people that you talked about that...
The Billy Joe Gumballs, they ain't switching.
But you find the people that have a little soft spot, and you do the soft sell and work on them a little bit, and then their appreciation will grow over time. But there's some people that just it's like Ford and Chevy.
Well,
you ain't going to get somebody to switch on that
waste
side.
Your good beer and your hard effort on them. There's no point in it. And what I would do personally if I was a home
and
brewer...
It doesn't make them bad people, by the way.
No. No. Just because you like one style of beer and you don't want to be adventurous doesn't mean you're a bad person. Doesn't mean you're stupid. Doesn't mean you're anything bad.
Right. It's just have no preference.
That's you know.
I think it makes them horrible. I've made really bad beer before. and of course, in Seattle, is filled with places where you can go and brew your own beer. It's a really cool thing. Businesses, small businesses. Oh, it's really neat. You go in, they have recipes. Everything's all set up for you already. You go in and you say, I want to make a port or whatever it's going to be that you want to make, and you can design your own labels and bring them back. So it's a pretty cool thing. But if it was me, and I had been brewing beer as long as James has, I would absolutely schedule events around this where, again, I could control the experience of the people that are going to be having the beer, and it was a dinner party sort of thing, and you eventually get to the point where you're going to open the beer that's the featured beer. You don't do it right away, you know? Have some other beers.
Teaser. It's a teaser kind of.
Absolutely. And then build some momentum. Let people have a meal first, whatever it's going to be, and then have your featured beer, your new beer, at an appropriate time to get them excited about. Let them, again, have an experience that they associate with the smell, the taste.
By the way, James is hitting me as he's talking.
I am. I can't help myself.
But I think, you know, and James hits on a critical point, you know, in the world of marketing, we talk about experiential marketing quite a bit. And that's, in the end, that's what it's all about, is the experience I had when I had that beer or did something. You have a sight, you have a smell, there's sounds that are associated with it. So really, how do you involve your five senses in creating that experience so that when people leave, they remember when you talk about, remember the party we had this at? All of that is together.
The smell of it.
The smell, the hear, the sight.
The taste, the texture.
I've just poured the final beer for James. And cheers, cheers, guys.
Notice he didn't say Bob.
Which one is it?
This is the vanilla porter.
Oh, the best one.
So thanks, thanks to you guys. And is that a good wow?
That's okay. I've reached the limit of my beer exploration. I prefer to go back to the last three that we had.
Bob, out.
Out on this one.
I will say, in signing off for James so he can turn his recorder off, that having met James 5 years ago, this is the first time I've actually been invited to sample his beer, so I'm not very happy about that.
But I will say
but it has been a pleasure.
But the experience that James created on our deck, overlooking the town and drinking the beer, makes me want to put it in an order, even though he can't sell it to me.
Well, there you go.
But he can mow your grass.
Well, thanks, guys. Bob Criscadden, James Gardner. Jim Bob is the name of the company.
www.jimbobcreative.com.
Proud growers of great ideas.
And you will find a link to that site in the episode description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
We enjoyed it. Proud growers of drinkers of good beer. We got to change it. Drinkers of good beer.
And I can't wait till the next episode when he interviews us on the next topic.
Well, thanks again to Bob and James. It was a lot of fun. Hope you were able to get some ideas on how to share good homebrew with your friends and relatives. Hope you had fun, too. Keep fighting the good fight. And you can find a link to jimbobcreative.com on basicbrewingradio.com. And if you have ideas on how to share homebrew with your friends and relatives, how to break through that barrier, drop me a note. Let me know. I'm going to try to continue to push Bob's envelope on beer styles. He was stuck with us there all the way up to the vanilla porter, but, you know, it's just a little too much flavor for him. But he'll get used to it. Pretty soon I'll be, you know, dragging out the Avery Maharaja and the New Belgium La Folie, and we'll see what he thinks about that. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from, and please check your email address. And while you're on our site, you can check out our online shop where you can find great pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more. In our first DVD, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, we walk you through the extract brewing process step-by-step from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it from us online. I'll box it up myself. Remember, we got shirts and hats. including our ever-popular Go Forth and Flocculate shirt. You can see a gallery on our site of people who have worn our shirts to cool places and taken pictures of themselves. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link as well. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Mastering the Grill, the Owner's Manual for Outdoor Cooking, and Nutiva Organic Hemp Protein Powder, 16-ounce jars, a pack of two. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we'll get a little slice of that. We appreciate your support. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson, our buddy in Austin, who also designed our logo. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.